All right, let's hit it.
Let's make this happen.
All right. This is Colorado Real Estate Experience. My name is Dick Girard. My co-host is Pat Draw.
How you doing, Dick?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good, thanks.
All right. So today we're going to talk about some reasons that people aren't buying and try to see if we can help people make that decision.
Well, I mean, I think if you really analyze it, there are three main things that hold people back from buying a house. You have, obviously, people have issue, or they think they have issue with down payment. So there's some fallacies there that we're going to really dissect and discuss a lot of different options for people, specifically first-time home buyers. But there's also some information in there for, anybody just buying a house in general, even if it's not your first one. So you got down payment. You've got the fact a lot of people feel like they can't afford a house, which I think is also there are some really big inconsistencies there that we want to really dissect and address. And then lastly, the actual commitment and what it means to be a homeowner. And I think that's a big one. And there's definitely some things we can talk about there that will hopefully help you. We're not going to convince you that owning a home is right for you. What we want to do is provide information to help you make that decision yourself. Because there are people that will listen to this at some point in time, just go, I don't want to be a homeowner. I shouldn't be right now. And that's okay. There's not a problem with that.
Not everybody should be. Right.
It's better to realize that early.
Absolutely.
So we'll dissect that today. And I think it's what we're going to talk about in our podcast today is just those three things. We're going to go in detail and we're going to address a bunch of different situations and really take off from there. So hopefully you like what we've got to say and really helps you make some decisions going forward.
Yeah. So let's just dive into the first one, because I think that is probably the one that we get the most questions about, or the most false things that are out there.
Yeah.
People still think today that you need 20% down to buy a house.
It's amazing, especially with as much information as out there on the internet, that just tells you everything nowadays. Makes you your own self-proclaimed expert. I would think that people would understand that you do not, absolutely do not need 20% down. Matter of fact, we'd argue you need very little down to get into a home, and we'll dissect that again. But
it doesn't mean you don't want to put 20% down.
Right, by all means, you might want to put it down, but it doesn't mean you need it to buy a house. You can put down less.
I heard it on like CNBC or Fox Business or one of those business stations. Somebody actually on that was saying that you have to have 20% down.
Really?
Yeah. And it's like, it's just amazing. So it's not just, people that are unaware, I mean, people are putting it out there and it's just not true,
Yeah. And it's a shame, because the one thing we want everybody to understand is, and this is the whole reason why we do what we do, the podcast and the Colorado Real Estate Experience Facebook page and YouTube channel and everything else. It's really to get the information out there for you, to help you make, want to educate you and help you make decisions. This is what we do for a living. It's what we enjoy. But the bottom line is this, everything we put out there, in terms of our content, in terms of education, it's really stuff that we're dealing with every day.
Right.
And we go, hey, this is an everyday question. And we talk about it, And again, we understand it's not something that's like super sexy and, exciting and stuff like that, but it's very relevant and very important to people as they are in the buying process. And that's what we want to do. We want to help you make better decisions. We want to help you understand what you're doing. And we want to be a resource for you guys as we go.
Right.
And
we want to help you make the right decision.
Right.
And that's the bottom line, is help you. We don't want to convince you to do something. We don't want to, influence you to go one way or the other. We want to just help you make the right decision, And for you, because the right decision for you might not be the right decision for the next person.
Yep.
And that's why we go in depth when we talk to people on what their goals are, their financial and personal goals and that type of thing to move forward, because that makes a big difference on whether you should, that has a lot to, and we'll get to that a little bit when we get to commitment, because a lot of those goals and how long you're going to stay in the house, that is a big that has a lot of factors into whether you should do it or not.
Right. Well, so I think let's chalk that up and say, let's erase that from your head. If you've heard that you need 20% down to buy a house, let's go ahead and do an exercise to wipe that from your brain. Grab out your
snap your fingers.
Yeah, snap your fingers. Spirit fingers.
Do a little twirl.
Yep, get rid of that. You do not need 20% down. So let's talk about kind of what you do need for your situation or the different situations that are available out there. And there's really a couple different things. I mean, really, for first-time home buyers, the opportunities range from 3% down on a conventional loan, 3.5% down on an FHA loan, and more than, in some cases, as little as only $1,000 out of your pocket, which is less than either one of those, to get any kind of the down payment assistance programs. So let's talk, Dick, a little bit about the 3% down, which is a conventional financing, and how that works and kind of what that looks like for people.
All right. Well, I mean, that's really what it is. It's 3% down, and it's a conventional loan, so it doesn't have the same characteristics of an FHA loan. The people that would qualify best for that type of loan are people with decent credit, and but you know, just starting out, don't have a lot of money to put down. But you do have to have, you know, some decent credit in order for it to make sense.
Well, keep this in mind. When we say decent, you do not have to have perfect credit.
Right.
I mean, so to kind of quote true guidelines, hard and fast, I mean, conventional lending does go down to 620 credit scores.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if you do have a 620 credit score, it doesn't mean you have bad credit. There just are obviously factors that are keeping your score low for whatever reason. So it does go down to 620. However, we will say that I think when we talk about, like, the advantageous aspect or the level of advantage would be, you know, if your credit score is at least in the higher 600s, yep, then it starts making, yeah, starts making more sense. Once it gets below that, FHA becomes more of an option or a better option because it's cheaper, better interest rate at that point. The mortgage insurance is cheaper. And again, we'll kind of dissect that individually, but the 3% conventional, let's talk about 3% as a number just to clarify, because we want to keep this on a, you know, kind of on a very basic level, so that we're not skipping something that some person may have a question about. 3% is the percentage of the sales price. So if you go in and put an offer on a home for $300,000, the down payment portion of that, of what you have to do on that loan, is going to be $9,000. $300,000, 3% down, is $9,000, right? So that's what your commitment to, plus closing costs, but that's what your commitment is in terms of the down payment, is that 3% of the $300,000 sales price. So pretty simple math, you know, $300,000.
But the closing cost is on top of that.
Right.
Too.
And we will address that and dissect that, yep, another, but that's a good point.
Yep.
So people don't think, oh, I only have
I had somebody that's under contract right now that thought we could roll the closing cost into the loan.
Yeah.
In a purchase, you can't do that.
Yep.
You know, you've never been able to do that, and that's something that, you know, that's out there also. Now, on a refinance, you can use your equity to roll your closing costs in, but on a purchase, it's your down payment plus your closing costs, which, you know, is anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000, is kind of a basic, you know, ballpark for those,
yeah,
closing costs.
Yep, exactly. Yep. So with that, and so part of the advantage of that 3% down first-time home buyer conventional program, and there's a couple different ones depending upon if it's Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, they do offer reduced mortgage insurance options, which is a big deal because that's what sometimes for some people makes the FHA piece a little more attractive, is the mortgage insurance in some options can be a little cheaper. So as your credit score gets a little bit lower, mortgage insurance on the conventional end gets a lot higher. And so there's like a tipping point where the conventional loan becomes a lot more expensive,
yep,
because of the mortgage insurance, and maybe the interest rate gets a little higher because your credit score. And that's where we try and gauge, you know, where you flip from FHA to conventional or conventional to FHA.
And that's one thing that we're here to do for you, you know, is to look at your different options and to show you the difference on your costs and kind of what we have to, you know, we will determine, hey, this mortgage insurance is cheaper than this. And, you know, so we can help you out with that. That's what we're here for. So it's not something that you have to know all the guidelines to go through yourself. That's what we're here to help you with.
Well, and I think that, I mean, this is the whole reason for what we do and why we do this, Dick, is, I mean, that's why we decided, right, that this year we would do a podcast, because really what we were doing is we were sharing some very valuable information with our agents,
mm-hmm,
and our database. And we thought, this is good stuff. And they're passing, you know, more and more people are passing it along to their friends and their family. And I mean, our entire business is built off referrals, but we thought we should be getting this out because there's a lot of questions out there. And then one of the challenges I think that people have nowadays is that it's not like you're buying a you know, Mortgages for Dummies book, right? I mean, ideally, you've got the internet, which has all kinds of information, and in all honesty, it becomes overwhelming. Right. And we don't want to overwhelm you. We want you to go one simple answer to one question. How much do I need down? Do I have to have 20% down? No. What's the minimum? The minimum is 3%. Give us a call, get in touch with us, and let us help put those numbers out there so you can make a determination based on what your situation is, because they're all different. And it's not your job to know where you fall. It's our job.
Right. And let's back up just a little bit and talk a little bit about mortgage insurance, because I think that's one reason that people think they have to have 20% down is because they want to avoid mortgage insurance at all cost. And that's not necessarily a smart thing to do. So let's talk about mortgage insurance and what it does, and, you know, kind of just explain what mortgage insurance is, and then, you know, how is it beneficial? You know, you pay a little bit of mortgage insurance, but you don't have to come up with, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, you know, so right. it's definitely worth it in some situations, especially if you don't have that money to put down.
Well, I mean, I think about the reason why well, let me back up. Mortgage insurance is nothing more than a protection for the lender in the event that the buyer or the person that's borrowing the money defaults on right. the house. And that's plain and simple. There's no advantage. Well, I take that back. There's limited advantage to you, the buyer, or the borrower, for mortgage insurance. The advantage is this. You're getting a house without putting down 20%.
Right.
And you know, the 20% came into play back after World War II, when the baby boomers were buying houses coming back from the war, and it was like they figured, put down 20%. This is what the banks determined. Put down 20%, and that's a safe bet that if you default on this loan, we can turn around and sell it and get our money back.
Right.
Out of it without too many problems. And then that became obviously as everything grew and the economy grew and, you know, baby boomers are having babies and they grew up. That's where mortgage insurance came into play, where there were companies coming out insuring the difference between the 20% down and whatever their, you know, whatever you actually did put down. Like in this case, it'd be 3%. Right. So long story short, don't worry about the nuts and bolts of mortgage insurance, but just know it is an advantage to you. That if you know that's it's good that it's out there.
Right.
It allows you to get in for $3,000. I mean, if you go buy a $300,000 house for $9,000 plus your closing costs, so let's say $13,000 or $14,000 out of your pocket, that's pretty good because you would have been putting $60,000 down plus closing costs.
Right.
You know, 100 years ago.
And that's a big that's a big difference. And I think that people think of mortgage insurance, well, it doesn't benefit me, it benefits the lender. And that's why they try to avoid it. But it really is benefiting you, because you look at your return on investment, $9,000, and whatever that, you know, your house appreciates and all of that, versus putting $50,000 or $60,000 down or $90,000 down, it's a big difference. And
well,
it does absolutely, you know, when we get into the wealth building portion of this, which we will get into a little bit later, it makes a huge difference. And so that mortgage insurance is worth it in a lot of cases. Now, obviously, if you can avoid it, you want to avoid it. But if you can't, it's a tool that you can use to get into that house. And it's a great tool to use.
Yeah. Don't let it deter you.
Right.
Sorry, I forgot to turn that phone off.
That's great.
Yeah, do not let that deter you. So the one thing is this, and I will say this about mortgage insurance. I'm seeing currently that the majority of the people that I've put in, like first-time homebuyers that put in the loans the last 5 years, a lot of them are out already.
Absolutely.
Not out of the home, they're out of the mortgage insurance because of the increase in value, the reduction in their principal balance, the combination of the two. So a lot of these guys are getting out of it. Right now, it's really good, and I wouldn't say this is typical times because I don't want people to come out and think that this happens all the time, but I think over a five or seven-year span, a lot of people, if they put down 3%, can get out of the mortgage insurance just purely by their balance coming down and their value going up, and so it's not a lifelong thing. But like Dick said, it's a great way to accumulate wealth. So we'll kind of dig into that a little bit later, probably a little deeper, but don't let mortgage insurance scare you. Let's slide over to the FHA side and talk a little bit about that, because it's a hair more. It's 3.5% down. And there's definitely some advantage to FHA. You can, your credit score can go down to 580, so it's mm-hmm. a lot lower. And there's a little more flexibility in terms of how you qualify.
Yep.
So you can afford a little more with FHA because they allow higher, what we'll call debt to income ratios. And for lack of sidetracked and going to somewhere, you know, another deep piece on that, it's just basically how much you owe compared to how much you make. Right. And we'll give more details on that in some other video. But for lack of a better term, debt to income ratio is a little higher, which allows you to afford a little more with FHA. Now, there's FHA covers a much broader ground, I think, than conventional in terms of how it helps people out. You do have to put down that extra 0.5%. But that's not also too, you don't have to be a first-time home buyer. On conventional, you have to be a first-time home buyer to get the 3%. Otherwise, you got to put down a minimum of 5%, just a hair more expensive.
Yep.
But on FHA, you don't. It's 3.5% minimum no matter what, no matter who you are, how many houses you've owned, whatever. You have to put down that 3.5% or more. But like I said, when you start getting to that gray area where you have good credit, but maybe your credit score is a little lower, maybe it's in the high 600s, a lot of times FHA makes more sense because the mortgage insurance is just one flat rate at 3.5% down. There is another level that, you know, is a little deeper. We won't talk about that right now, not to confuse people. Right. But it's going to be the same rate, whereas conventional mortgage insurance changes based on your score and how much you put down and your debt-to-income ratio and all that stuff. So there's some fluctuations where that sometimes the simplification of FHA with the mortgage insurance makes it a lot cheaper to use an FHA loan compared to conventional, even if you do qualify for conventional.
Right. And FHA also has an upfront mortgage insurance piece to it, but that can be rolled into the loan, so that's not a cost at closing.
So. Yeah, and it's, and what I always look at too when I deal with people, you know, some people just have to qualify FHA because they don't qualify for conventional. But if you've got both, we analyze that and we really look at it and go, hey, this is going to cost you X number of dollars, not out of your pocket, but it's going to come out of your equity at some point, whether you refinance down the road or sell the house, that's going to be paid for. And is it worth it to you?
Right.
Because here's the other option. You're going to pay this per month compared to this. And a lot of times people will take the upfront mortgage insurance knowing that it's kind of a bet on their future, so to speak.
Well, and for some people too, some people can afford a higher monthly payment because they make enough money and they just don't have a lot of down payment.
Right.
And some people have a little bit more money to put down but can't afford, you know, a higher payment. So everybody's a little different. So everybody's going to be analyzed a little different on depending on where you, you know, how much money you make, how much your debts are, how much money you have to put down, you yep. know. And so we can definitely do that. And like you said, after FHA, we go to the 5% down conventional.
Right.
And that's open to anybody.
Yep, 5% yep. down is open to anybody. So your minimum down payment conventional is 5%, 3% if you're a first-time home buyer. FHA is 3.5% minimum for everybody. And that's kind of the three basic programs. Yeah. I mean, there are other programs, but those are the three basic that probably yeah. cover 98% of every loan done.
And you can go to 10% or 7% or, you know, 15%, 20% and all that,
right.
all that type of thing. And there's different levels of mortgage insurance, different levels of interest rates, you know, depending on all those. And if you want a comparison, and we'll just do a basic comparison, and we'll do a 3% down, an FHA loan, and a 5% down, and maybe a 10% down. And if you want to text the word loans, L-O-A-N-S, to 720-650-6440, we will send you a comparison to with those different loans, just to show you the difference in payments on those types of loans. So we will definitely. Can you shut that off? Or
it is.
Oh,
it's off.
All right. So, but yeah, if you text the word loans to 720-650-6440. And we will that will automatically shoot you a comparison to of those loan programs. So you can just kind of see the differences, and definitely let us know if you know, we can definitely talk to you and you know, figure out which of those loans are best for you depending on what your situation is. Um, So let's go. Let's talk about down payment assistance a little bit. So there are those down payment assistance programs that can, if you don't have a down payment available, we can definitely help with the down payment. So there are different, depending on which county you live in, there's different programs. The CHAFA program is a statewide program, and you can get into a loan with as little as $1,000 down. So that can definitely help you with your down payment if everything else looks good on your situation, but you need a little more down payment. We can definitely see if you qualify for that. There are some income restrictions for that, but we can definitely help you with that and see if that's something that will benefit you.
Absolutely. So I think that we'll do in the future, we'll definitely do like a full show on down payment assistance.
That's something that you can.
Because there's so many, we don't want to generalize, because there are a lot of programs out there. County, state, nonprofit, all kinds of stuff. So we don't want to generalize it and make it sound like it's only CHAF or whatever, because there's a lot of different ones. And they're all fair. There's some similarities, but there are some that have some quirks that give some differences too. So we'll definitely do a show on that in the future. But just know that, you know, I don't know of any. I don't know them all. I don't know of any that are going to get you in with no money out of pocket. I think you have to have at least a minimum of $1,000 for just about any of them.
Yep. There used to be some, but
yeah, it's got to be some skin in the game type thing. And I know there are special programs out there, case by case. But what ends up happening from what we've seen is they end up being pretty expensive, and then they kind of overrides the benefit of getting any kind of free money. Right. So,
and you might not qualify for all of them either. And that's why we don't, you know, throw that out for everybody. So we want to have that consultation with you to see where your situation is. And then we will, you know, present the ones that you qualify for.
Yep, absolutely. And if you guys didn't think we're real people doing real things, look at all the mistakes being made when I forgot to turn my volume off on my ringer, which it's all off.
Definitely.
Yep, totally threw Dick off. He couldn't think. Couldn't react.
That's right.
So, let's move on to number two. That's kind of the number one reason I think people are holding back on buying homes. At least it truly is well documented that one of the number one reasons people think they can't come up with a down payment or whatever. They just have bad information. So that kind of gives you a good understanding of what's out there.
And I think even if you don't think you have enough for a down payment, call us and we'll give you some options. You know, and maybe you don't. And we can get you on a plan to where you can save some money up. And whether you're buying now or whether you're buying next year or 2 years from now, we can set you on a plan to do that. Because it's possible that you might not have enough money for a down payment, or it might not make sense to you to buy now. But let us know and have that consultation with us, and then you'll know for sure whether you can afford it or not.
Absolutely.
As far as the down payment goes.
Yep. Absolutely. So on to number two. And number two would be that you cannot afford a house. I can't afford it, right? I mean, there's a lot that goes into this. I mean, it could be everything from your debts, the what you perceive as what a house costs to live in, so on and so forth. I mean, I think the one thing that you have to look at is it's cheaper, truthfully, in a lot of cases, at least, you know, it's actually cheaper than renting. And a lot of people don't understand that, you know? So I know if you go out, and especially if you're talking about having a two-bedroom apartment and, you know, any kind of, you know, the majority of the Denver metro areas, and that's two-bedroom apartment is going to run you, what, $1,900 $2,200 a month?
Absolutely.
You know, and that's not even, you know, some of the higher-priced areas. That's just fairly normal. Just talked to a buyer this morning, you know, lives in a very normal area, not like a high-rent district. So $1,600 and high $1,600s per month with a one-bedroom apartment. She's like, I am going to be a homeowner in 2020, come hell or high water. I just do not want to pay rent. And we went over numbers, and, you know, she can buy a house for someone neighbor like $1,750, and that's a pretty nice house with two bedrooms, two baths, not a one-bedroom apartment. So, you know, you're comparing apples to apples. You're going to go out and buy a one-bedroom house, which you may or may not. It's going to be cheaper probably than what the rents are.
And if it's not cheaper, you know, as far as the comparison exactly, you might be paying $100 or $200 more. That's well worth it, because what you're doing with that payment is you're paying down the loan and you're getting the appreciation on the new place versus just putting money into someone else's pocket. You know, that's the biggest thing with renting. And you know, it's the rents are continue to go up in this town too. They're not going down, you know, and if you want to lock in your payment, you know, you want to really be stable. The only way to do that is to buy a house, you know, because that locks in your payment. It's very hard to lock in a rent payment, you know, unless you're going to sign a 5-year lease, you know, or something like that, which I don't see very often.
No, that would be, yeah, that'd be a problem. So for sure. I mean, I think one of the other things too, Dick, and we've talked about this almost ad nauseum, to be honest with you, is that, you know, the media, and I'm really talking internet, TV, radio, whatever, the media kind of blows this whole thing out of proportion in terms of...
As they do with everything.
Yeah, right. For sure. Yes. Absolutely.
Right.
That's a whole other podcast.
Right.
But I mean, I think the media blows out of proportion in terms of, you know, the values, you know, going through the roof and what's happening with rents and all these different things. Yeah. I mean, it's very pocketed. I mean, that does, there are cases where things are flying, you know, off the shelves quickly and stuff like that, but it's not that you can't afford it. Right. Maybe you just, it, you know, I, especially with Denver Metro and specifically Denver Metro, cause that's what we're talking about is it's very pocketed. I just dealt with a group of buyers. It was actually pretty interesting to see, and it's funny because it just came to mind. But it was interesting that they had this little area in mind that they really wanted to live in, and so they were, like I said, they were kind of very, very hyper focused on this area in Denver Metro, and they were looking at houses there, and they were losing every battle because the houses were getting bid up and stuff like that. They didn't have a lot of extra money in which. And they shouldn't have put extra money towards it because they would have been just purely a, you know, kind of a glamour buy at that point. They would have wasted money. But they finally decided to kind of go, okay, here's our parameters. They ended up finding a neighborhood, a couple actually, different neighborhoods to look in. They were less than a mile away from this one area they wanted to be. And they went out, put an offer on a house, got their asking price, didn't have to overpay for it, didn't really compete against anybody else. It was super easy. And the whole time, we're talking like almost a month, they've been looking at this one little pocket in, like I said, one of the Denver suburbs, and it just wasn't working. But it was just a hot neighborhood, you know, and they went to a neighborhood that was close, still met their needs. You know, they talked with their agent, and they really went over what it was they really wanted and realized they didn't give up anything other than extreme close proximity to some of the, I think, some of the social aspects that this little neighborhood brought. Mm-hmm. They're still within walking distance. And they thought, this is crazy. We would have paid $20,000 more for a house, probably overpaid by $10,000 because of what the bids that were going on. And we still can walk to where we want to walk and do the things we want to do. We didn't even think about it. They were so hyper-focused. So I think it is definitely pocketed, but I think the media is blown out of proportion that everybody's overpaying for houses. Everybody's doing this. And I think it's scaring some of the buyers off and putting them Absolutely. In the position to have to rent again, which is probably scarier than owning a home.
Absolutely. Well, I've got a client that came in, I think it was from Missouri, 2 years ago, and sold a place there and was buying a place here. And the places were way more expensive here than they were in Missouri, right?
Yeah.
And he was sticker shock, you know, oh my gosh, you know, I can't buy this place for that kind of money. And I... You know, we talked about it, and he was going to rent, you know, and he decided to buy and made the right decision. He put, I believe it was 5% down. 2 years later, he's able to get rid of his mortgage insurance in 2 years because the place appreciated so much. You
and
know,
that
he
means
bought
it went up 15%.
That's absolutely.
Yeah.
And
that's huge.
It was, he bought, I think it was in Arvada. And he just bought at the right, but he is so happy that he decided to buy. And it was a hard decision for him because he didn't think he could afford it. You know, he's thinking, gosh, I can't afford this, you know, and he can, he did. And he is super happy that he did it. I had another client that had some issues back in the, you know, 2008, 2009, you know, where I think he lost a house or lost a lot of money on the house. I don't think he got foreclosed on, but he did lose a bunch of money. And he was afraid he was buying at the top of the market. And he also And he bought a year and a half ago, and he put 10% down, and he is now getting rid of his mortgage insurance.
Oh, wow.
So it's the same thing. He is super – he took a lot of convincing that it was the right thing to do, and he finally – pulled the trigger and did it, and he is super happy. You know, just talked to him, did a mortgage review for him, and was like, hey, we can get rid of that mortgage insurance with no refinancing, no anything. We just have to, you know, get the appraisal done, and you're good to go. So it's a psychological thing of whether you can afford something or whether you can't,
right?
Too, you know, and I think you learn to make that payment, and after a little while, it's even if it's a little bit more than what you think it should be, you learn to be able to afford it, you know, and the wealth that you can create by actually, you know, convincing yourself that you can afford it, you know, and. You know, there's a difference between really not being able to afford it and thinking you can't afford it too. You know, and we will help you with that too. I mean, we're not gonna get you in a place that you really can't afford and that you're gonna, you know, get you can't make the payments on. You know, that's a whole different ball game.
Well, so there's the last two things we've talked about. It's kind of interesting because I'm listening to what you're saying. I kind of thought about what I said a minute ago, and then I'm like, okay, these things meld the. They kind of all meld together to create an ebb and flow, if you will, of really the market we're in here in Denver. And it, because on one hand, I mean, I'm talking about the media blowing up or blowing things out of proportion, talking about, you know, values going through the roof. And then I'm kind of saying that it's pocketed and that makes sense. And I've got all kinds of, you know, documented customers right in the mix right now that are living in that world. And then on the other hand, your story talks about the somebody going in and paying a little more than kind of they are comfortable for, and then buying something, and then the value going up so quickly that they were able to get a mortgage, rid of their mortgage insurance a couple of years. And I think that, and I'm only bringing this up because I don't want people to think that what we just said contradicted each other. That's the whole reason why that you can afford something. And the whole reason, because what you can't afford to do is your guy from Missouri who was wanted to be a homeowner,
right?
But he was going to rent and sit it out,
right?
Right. So what I'm getting at is all that wealth that he created, yep. He would have missed out on as his rents would have went up because just as fast as, you know, some of the things the media is talking about on the house values going up, what they're not saying or you're not hearing as much about are the rents are going up at a faster rate.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, let's say you sit out of the market for 2 or 3 years, the values are still going to have gone up. So you just have to pay more for the house because it's worth more, which is natural, but you're paying more for it. And you would have paid more in rent over that 2 or 3 year period while you wait. So really kind of bringing those two conversations together so that we're saying, okay, how do these work? Because they sound like they actually offset each other. They really don't. What they both do is they both support the fact that, hey, it's better to afford it now than to not afford it later. You know, because in Dick's example, we're talking about a guy who would have, you know, probably paid what, probably $35,000 more for his house,
right?
You know, which that would have cost more money.
Well, right? the one guy that had the trouble, you know, and was afraid that he was buying at the top of the market, he actually waited a year before he pulled the trigger.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. So he would have been in the he originally looked at buying when my first guy did, the guy from Missouri. And he bought at a much lower price and actually a better interest rate than the other guy. So waiting a year did cost the other person, but not waiting 2 years, you know,
right.
Helped him.
Yeah.
So there definitely is a cost of waiting component to this whole thing because I don't know about you, but I do know what you think about this, but I don't think that you know, prices are going down in this town. You know, they might not go up as much as they have in the past, but they're not going down.
They're still
going forward, right?
I mean, there's a lot of demand to live here, and there's also a lot of people that. So if you think about it, I mean, and I actually read a study somewhere, and I don't recall, so I can't even cite it, but something they talked about the number of college kids with CU, CSU, the Denver schools mm-hmm. that were coming in from out of state and not leaving.
Right.
Right. And they're just getting jobs here.
Absolutely.
Well, two reasons. One, we have a, you know, our economy is fairly strong here.
Right.
And we have a lot of new companies and we have a lot of new jobs and employers. So these people can stay here. Also, too, I mean, our world is changing pretty drastically. And a lot of people don't have to live in one set place to have a good job.
Right.
They can telecommute.
Right.
You know, and so that's providing a pretty big opportunity for a lot of people to live in Denver. And
it's a great place to live.
It is. And there's
a
lot of people that are on the sidelines that are renting right now and sharing places that are going to be getting into the homeownership world soon. And so point is, it's simple supply and demand. We can't build them fast enough.
That's right.
You know,
building them fast.
Not even close. So, you know, again, and we say this because one of the things when you sit back and go, can I afford it or can I afford it? How can you not afford it is really the question.
Can you afford not to buy?
Right. Right. Yeah, because it's not going to get cheaper.
Right.
You know, it's like you wanted to buy a certain stock and you held out for 2 years and then all the values went up and the next thing you know, you go buy the stock and it's more expensive. So same type of thing. And again, which we really focus on this quite a bit in our show because we really believe in it. I mean, real estate's a great way to build wealth. So put your money somewhere. You got to put it anyways. If you're going to rent, you're got to pay to live somewhere, right? So if you rent, you're paying somebody else's mortgage, you might as well pay your own.
That's right. And if you are renting right now, text the word rent to 720-650-6440. Rent, the word rent, to 720-650-6440, and I will send you a rent versus own analysis just to show you the difference in renting versus owning over some years worth of time and what that will what that'll do for you, and you know, as far as building wealth and as far as where your money's going. And it's a real eye opener, I think, for people that want to rent long term. Now, if you're renting short term, there's nothing wrong with renting. You know, if you're not going to be here for long term, then renting is a good thing. But if you're going to be here for a long period of time or a few years, then we need to look at locking in, you know, your payment by buying something and, you know, showing you what that wealth will build over time.
Yep, absolutely. So, I mean, in terms of wrapping up the little section here about, you know, whether you can or can't afford it, I mean, I think it's important. We know rents are going up. House values are going up, but that's not a bad thing. It's the cost of waiting is a big deal. So why sit out and wait? I mean, you're going to be able to afford it more today than you are next year, even if you do get a raise, because a lot of times, you know, your raise at your job is not sufficient with the increase in our economy and, you know, inflation and whatever. So you have all that. You also have the threat of interest rates potentially going up, which, you know, makes it a little less affordable as you go on.
Yep.
And the bottom line is this: on a house, which a lot of people overlook, is you can lock in your payment, right?
Absolutely.
If you're renting this year, and let's just say you're using that $2,000 rent that we talked about, you're renting for $2,000, next year is $2,100. $2,150, whatever it might be. I can't tell you the number of people I know that have are trying to figure out ways to do something different because their rent's going up again.
That's right.
You know, I mean, they're like, oh my gosh, my lease is up in 6 months and I got a notice from my landlord, the rent's going up. And they need to know whether I'm going to stay or if I'm going to go. But man, I'm so confused. I don't feel like 6 months is enough time. And then you have all these questions. So chances are good your rent's going to go up. And you have to understand that. And, you know, with a house, if you buy it, you're going to lock in your payment. I mean,
it's actually safer to buy a house as far as affordability,
right,
than it is anything else. And yep. I had a client that was renting a house, and the landlord decided to sell the house. What do you do then? Now you don't have the opportunity to pay.
Choice.
Yeah, you don't have the opportunity to pay more in rent. You're out. You
yep.
know, and so. I think one more thing that I want to say about renting versus owning is, you know, we've talked about this a little bit too, is it's not just locking in the rent, you know, the financial part of it, or locking in the payment. It is the ability to, you know, have a dog, You know, the ability to do what you want to do with the place and not have somebody else tell you you can't paint the walls, you can't upgrade the appliances, you can't, you know, have a dog, you know, under, you know, 14 pounds or whatever it is, you know, and that your landlord says you can do. So there's a lot of freedom in owning a house too. It frees you up to do what you want to do. And that kind of leads us right into the next piece is the commitment piece. You know, is you do have to be a little committed to buy a house, but you also have to be committed to signing a 1-year rent too. You know, so a 1-year lease. So I think let's talk a little bit about that in commitment and what it takes to own a house, but also the freedoms that it gives you. It's a commitment, but it also frees you up on a lot of things where you can start making the decisions instead of having somebody else make those decisions.
That's exactly right. And Dick, what I was going to say is that there's a reason why it's called the American dream. That's why they say homeownership is the American dream. And the reason for that is because of all those things Dick just talked about.
That's right.
You have a roof over your head. You are in control of that roof over your head, which is right at the top of the list of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Food, water, shelter type thing. So it's a big deal. So owning a home and having a home and it being yours and you're in control of it is a big deal. And like I said, those are all the factors that go into, you know, having a dog, doing things in your yard, that type of thing, taking pride of ownership in where you live because you love your house. Again, I have a lot, I know a lot of people and I interact with a lot of people, clients and friends both that are homeowners. And it's like, hey, we have this great backyard. We're putting in a fire pit and we're really doing these cool things to it. We're going to have a party and come on over and let's have fun. And I mean, just totally different than the people I know that are renters that are like, what are you guys doing this weekend? Oh, I'm going to some guy's house who's having a barbecue in his backyard because he just did this whole new backyard. I mean, there's a sense of pride and ownership, you know, that comes in. And like I said, in the bottom line is, I mean, it's that person, that couple or that person having ownership in that property and, really just feeling like it's theirs and it's something that they can sink their teeth into.
Well, I'll tell this quick story of when I bought my first house, you know, it was the week that I bought it and I went out in the backyard, you know, and I was just looking at this and it has this big tree in the backyard and I was like, that's my tree, you know? And it was a weird sensation, but it was that pride thing. It's like I own that tree, you know, and you don't think about that when you're, you know, when you're buying your place and everything, but now it's like, I own that thing and it really is a different feeling than renting.
And then your wife went out and cut it down.
That was before I was married, actually.
Oh, okay.
So I got to keep the tree. I got to keep whatever I wanted. So there was a lot of, there is that sense of, wow, that is my tree, you know, and this is my, carpet, my appliances. I can do what I want to with these things, and you can cut the tree down if you want, you know, and you can keep it there if you want. So there's a lot of different things that go into it psychologically that are very powerful. And I've read some things in the last year about, you know, the millennials not wanting the American dream isn't owning a home anymore. But I'm starting to see that those surveys are changing.
And I disagree with that
100%. I totally do.
Because that's the market that I deal in. I deal with a lot of millennials.
Absolutely.
And my kids are millennials. And I'm seeing it from them. I mean, and I'm actually seeing, believe it or not, because of maybe the level of education. I don't know if it's education. I don't know what it is. But they're coming out of college or they're getting out of school. And they're able to buy houses. Like they just, I see a different level of responsibility, which is really kind of unusual. Like I didn't buy a house, I think, until my mid to late 20s is my first house.
Yep.
But you know,
I haven't waited longer than that. Yeah,
I was in a job that you know I could have been transferred anywhere, right. So I didn't really know, and I didn't want
to. I enjoyed renting. I liked to. I was single, and I didn't want to. You know, it was just jumping around, and it was okay to rent.
Yeah, you had a dresser and a kitchen with three things in the fridge.
I could travel. I could do things, and with an apartment.
Well,
you know,
and
not
that's
kind of
what we're talking about with commitment. I mean, so you have all these pieces, and you have all this. There's a psychological side to it. There's another side to it. And there is a commitment to owning a home. However, the bottom line is this, is that not everybody is really right to be a homeowner. Not everybody should be.
Right.
You know, everything from having the right mindset. You have to take care of a house. You don't have to take care of anything renting, you know. And so we would never sit there and say every single person should be a homeowner because that's crazy talk. It's just not what we think. We don't believe that way. Our goal is to help people make the right decision for them. And I have plenty of people that have been renting and talking to me every year, and they go back and rent. And we talk again when their lease comes up, and then they go back and rent. And that's fine because it's like anything else. If you're not ready to own a pet, don't be a pet owner.
That's right.
Right? Some people aren't made. They don't have the lifestyle. They're not made for that. And obviously that's a very small example compared to owning a home. But regardless of everything else, if your mindset or your lifestyle does not really lead to that, to the pieces that are needed to be a homeowner, then don't own one. Rent. Renting's just fine.
Well, and you know, the statistics really are about 65% of people right now are homeowners. You
is
know,
that what
and
it is?
That's about where it should be. You know, that's normally where it should be. Back in the early 2000s, when we got into trouble, it got up to 70 to 70, a little over 70%, and that's when people started foreclosing and that, because there was a lot of people that shouldn't have been homeowners that got into home ownership. So it's right around that 60. So it's not like everybody in the world or everybody in the country. We're not talking about the world. We're just talking about the country right now. Mm-hmm. 65% are homeowners, and that's about where it historically should be. So not everybody should be homeowners, you know. So and it's not 80 or 90% like you would think. You know, it's in the 60 to 70% range is where it really should be.
Yeah. Well, and so, I mean, in terms of like looking at how this all fits, I mean, the one thing you want to think about this as well, when you're really, what we're trying to do is really help people sit down. And if they're trying to make the decision, maybe one little bitty thing we said will kind of sink in. And the point here with the commitment piece, which is really what we're wrapping up and we're ending with, is owning a house is a commitment. And so is renting. Renting is a commitment too. So either way, you're going to make a commitment one way or the other. Which one's best for you is up to you to determine yourself. But like I said, don't hesitate to reach out to us and let us help you walk through what you can afford, what payments might look like on certain houses. Because I will tell you, there is something, I'm using the word magical because I don't have another one to use right now, but there's something magical, if you will, about you calling us and us saying, hey, you qualify for $2,300 a month. Okay, so what can you rent for $2,300 a month? What can you buy for $2,300 a month? Now go look at both. Go look at the apartment that's $2,300 a month and, you know, walk in and feel the lobby and feel going up and down the stairs of the elevator or whatever it is, park the crowded parking lot, and then go look at the house that you can buy for probably just about the same amount of money out of pocket if you do it the right way. Or a little bit more, but either way, look at what that gets you. And like I said, walk around the neighborhood and look at the people in their backyards. Look at the people, you know, with their garages open and all their stuff and their workshops and their bikes they're working on or whatever they're doing. And just understand those are your options. And that's where you have to make your decision. And we're not here to tell you one's better than the other. We're only here to help you make that decision and provide as much information as possible that we can for you to help make that decision a little bit easier.
And there are all kinds of statistics that show that people that own homes are, you know, make more money and they're happier and they're wealthier. And you know, obviously that's not 100% situation, but there definitely are statistics that show. And I think the psychology of it really plays into that. You know, you do act different, you know, than when you own a home than when you don't.
Right.
And I think that there's something to that. So let's just kind of go through the things that we can send out to you. Remember, if you want that comparison, you can text the word loans to 720-650-6440. And if you want a rent versus own analysis, if you're a renter right now and you want to see the differences between that, text the word rent to that same number, 720-650-6440. And if you want a cost of waiting analysis, we can do that for you too. Just what is the, you know, we can use some historical data on what houses are going to be in the future and where we think interest rates are going to be. You can text the word wait to 720-650-6440. And please look at our websites and our Facebook group for Colorado Real Estate Experience. Go to coloradorealestateexperience.com, and you can also look us up on YouTube. And we've got a lot of information out there for you. And if you want to talk to us and you want a specific analysis just for you, definitely just give us a call. You can call that number or text that number and just say, hey, I want an analysis, or text us whatever questions that you have, and we'll definitely get back to you as soon as we can.
Sounds good. Well, a lot of information today, so hopefully pull it together. Three main things about what's holding people back from buying a home. One is down payment. Two is they don't believe they can afford it. And three is some people question whether the commitment. And I know we beat that up, and there's a lot of information there. So keep this in mind. What we really, our goal for our channel and what we do is we'll put a lot of content out, and we'll help you make decisions, and we'll just really throw this out there for you guys to figure out. Anything we might say in these podcasts that will help you better make your decision going forward and maybe make your life a little easier when you're in the home buying process.
Absolutely. We're here to help you any way that we can, and just let us know what we can do to help.
Sounds good. Have a great day.
Thanks.